All right, everybody, let's get into this week's episode. For those of you who are just tuning in to this podcast, who are a little bit new to the game, hello, hello. Allow me to introduce myself. Hello, my name is Tally. I am a former fashion marketing exec turned, I'd say, self-educated quantum scientist and psychoanalyst. And I'm also the founder of Superfreak, which is rooted in quantum psychosomatics, which is the epigenetics of mind-body reprogramming. I know that sounds like a lot of fancy language, but it is a pioneering field that I'm involved with now, and it's very much bigger than me. And here you essentially learn how to awaken to a deeper life without getting in your own way, in addition to the mechanics of what this work really is. You are not your genes. You are epigenetically bound through generational fuckery to beliefs and inherited genetics in terms of patterns for behavior and how you age. All of that is informed from how you were raised and also what you came in here with at birth. And we unpack all of that here on this podcast. So essentially, I read patterns for a living, your patterns. After 1,000 sessions, I mapped what I saw. I wrote a book about it. And it's called Is This All There Is? Awaken to a Deeper Life, which is now available worldwide on Amazon. Super Freak, the podcast, unpacks what I call the science of self, from body and soul literacy to vibration, consciousness, quantum physics, and spiritual psych. Essentially, this is non-woo conversations about super woo shit. This is a space for those who are interested in breaking generational patterns and who are called to live beyond limitation, where mind meets body, frequency meets form, and you meet the next version of yourself. So if you're truly ready to free your mind, unlock the body, and become limitless, you are in the right place. So welcome, welcome to Super Freak Awakening for the Next Gen. Let's get into part two of Quantum Sex, The Origins of Pleasure, a five-part exploration of sacred sexuality, energy, and consciousness. So in part one, I went into the quantum nature of sex, how sexual energy acts as a carrier wave of consciousness, essentially exploring entanglement, resonance, and then the energetic science behind intimacy. And so many of you liked it, which is awesome. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about the sacred origins of pleasure. This series came into my awareness to start really diving into recently, but also the topic itself I've been covering for the last, I want to say, year and a half, but mainly through archetypal distortion. So where the masculine and the feminine have gotten so off course in terms of their dynamics and the polarity of their dynamics. Now, because we're moving into a completely different level of resonance in terms of consciousness, there is this activation that's happening throughout the collective, which is the dismantling of distorted systems via dark twin flame, dark abuse in relationships, dark narcissism in relationships, like the inversion of the optimal kind of primal instinctual, you know, high vibratory relationship. And when I say high vibratory, I just mean that both partners have worked through so much of their own shit that they're not carrying a lot of this baggage. It's not a replication of their childhood that they're playing out. It's not a karmic partner. You've transcended the karmic partner. You've transcended all of the hard stuff. And you're literally in a union where you amplify the light instead of the shadow in each other. Now, granted, yes, there's going to be some friction in terms of, let's say, reconciling some of the gray matter, like some of the lighter gray stuff. It's like fringe patterns, but the charge behind them are not so elevated. It's just not this crazy, emotional, hypercharged dynamic that you live in. It's also not hyper-avoidant. It's extremely present. And I'm going to talk about that at the very end of the series of what I would say is a different lens to look through. Instead of divine union, it is cohered partnership, fully coherent partnership. And the effects of what that is, the energy of what that is, I've had that, let's say, circuitry run through my nervous system. So this is when all of this information came in. And I have a sensuality workshop coming up for women and men that want to join that workshop. It's going to be fantastic. It's in May, which will bring in a lot of this level of understanding about what intimacy actually feels like and looks like, and what sex is utilized for from, let's say, a first principle perspective or just a higher divine perspective, the mechanics and also the energetics behind that. Okay, so the sacred origins of pleasure, how ancient cultures viewed sex essentially as a portal to higher consciousness, more on divine union and energetic alchemy, and then examining sacred texts, tantric traditions, and indigenous knowledge that positioned pleasure as a key to expansion rather than indulgence. So first, sex is a portal to higher consciousness. Many ancient traditions saw sex as a gateway to expanded states of being rather than something that is just a physical gratification, which has happened so much in the West. And we can go as far back as Egyptian, Taoist, and Hindu traditions, where these traditions would recognize sexual energy as a force for awakening the soul and amplifying one's energetic field, which I touched upon a little bit in part one. For example, the Kundalini system, which many of you have either practiced or heard about, I'm sure, especially with the advent of yoga becoming so popular in the last 10 to 20 years. This system describes how sexual energy can rise through the spine, activating different energy centers and then obviously leading to enlightenment. Much of the sacred origins of pleasure had to do with physically preparing light bodies for war, expansion, fertility, birth, etc. It was an alchemic kind of intention, and we lost a lot of that with the performative element over the years. And through having to survive women's movement, thinking that they didn't want to have to be forced into procreation if they didn't want it, you've seen this kind of start to trickle off with the rise of convenience and just evolution of humanity and human consciousness. Obviously, there's been a large fall from having the relationship with sex be more fluid and energy and frequency and expansiveness focused to being something that should be shamed through religious indoctrination and religious ideologies. What that's done is that has created and forced paradox. It's forced polarity. So we have extremely potent views on virtue. And then you have the opposite of that, which is the scarlet letter or the dark whore, something like this. This archetype that played out in society where if you were defeathered, if you will, then you were considered unlovable, cast aside, and not as pure. So the more pure you are, the more virginous you are, the higher your value, which means you could command, or the fathers could command, a higher dowry for their daughters. And this was part of exchange. So sex exchange by way of virtue and beauty is a very deeply ingrained transgenerational pattern. All women run this, by the way. We all run it in different ways because we are part of the collective. And so not only do we run that level of data sets, we also run our individual data sets plus our family's aggregate. So all of your father's experiences, all of your mother's experiences throughout the entire maternal and paternal line, the latest aggregate of that. You're the latest rendition of your family's lineage. And then it becomes exponential because the data, just like AI, becomes meta. It learns on itself, and every single one of your family members are contributing to that data set, and then every human is contributing to that data set. So we're just one big cosmic cloud of information until we actually become aware of the patterns that we're running, and then we choose a different reality for ourselves. So because, let's say, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, and beyond, even back into even more ancient text, there was experimentation. Pleasure was part of the physical experience. It was part of something that amplified. It was almost like using medicine, like plant medicines. It was a requirement. People needed to connect physically. It was not just a physical act. It's frequency technology. So it's one of the fastest ways to alter state, amplify energy, and let's say access parts of yourself that live beyond the mind when utilized correctly. Most systems then knew this long before modern culture reduced it to performance, validation, or transaction, which is what we're seeing now. And we're seeing the height of it now because that system needs to be destroyed, right? It needs to self-destruct. So Egyptian, Taoist, tantric lineages worked with sexual energy as a power source to activate the body's internal technology, awaken dormant potential, rewire consciousness from the inside out. Not because it's sacred, but because it's a built-in technology. It's a remembrance, which is what we're trying to do here. So sex reorganizes the nervous system. It moves energy through the spine, right? And it moves energy through the fascia. It moves energy through the DNA. It can collapse old patterning and open entirely new bandwidths of perception if you know how to work with it. So some people have incredibly activated sexual centers and have like out of body sexual experiences, or have their bodies completely open up to a partner. And some of that is, most of that, especially the women that I have worked on before, and the men that I've worked on before, who have incredibly charged sexual centers, it is entirely through distortion, and it almost becomes like addictive and abusive. And I have met only, let's say, a couple of couples that are using it in a pretty advanced alchemic way, but it's naturally who they are in terms of when they come together. They create that level of alchemy. And so they just continue to awaken and merge and separate out and merge and separate out, and it amplifies their body and it becomes extremely nourishing. Sex is not something you have to do with your partner. It's just this deep, nourishing, incredibly regulating experience. So you advance, you accelerate, you expand together, you have all of this electric energy that the masculine provides the woman to go deeper into herself. She provides this incredibly nurturing energy to her partner, and both get nourished, deeply, deeply nourished. And you just kind of bask in what the after effects of that experience looks and means and feels like for you. That's essentially an idea of what that looks like when it's optimized and utilized in a very high potency kind of way. A lot of people think that they're doing that. And I'm sure that they are, in that they think they are. However, it's not something, it shouldn't bleed into other people's fields. That level of sexual energy should not bleed and become so enmeshed and ooey, and it's like aura abuse. You can just kind of feel a couple, and you feel when somebody runs a tremendous amount of sexual energy, that's no control over it. That is just oozing out of someone's field and moving into other people's energy field. And almost becomes a little bit uncomfortable to be around, or they just attract like fucking crazy, all these different types of people. Men are going to be like, whoop. I mean, it's like a cat in heat basically, but she doesn't know that she is. Every single other male cat is going to try to like take it, you know, take that cat on for themselves or mate with that cat, because it's just innate in masculine DNA to conquer fertility, right? To use fertility to have their seed be passed on. It's just innate. So the second part of this, divine union, which I have not a whole lot of reverence for that language, even though I've said it before, I would say now what has been refined for me is embodied union, or more of the language set around coherence partnerships. So this idea, the concept of hieros gamos, which is sacred marriage, in ancient mystery schools kind of symbolized the merging of masculine and feminine polarities, both within the self and through sexual union. Indigenous cultures viewed sex as a means of deepening one's connection with nature and the divine. I especially tuned into this frequency when I was in Peru in South America. It was very, very potent there. And they would sync up the sacredness of this, let's say, activity with moon cycles and solar flare eclipses and things like that, certain flares, whatever they can tune into to nature, the skies, the field around them. They would sync up these acts with nature. And it became a very beautiful experience because your body is nature bound, and the more you're in sync with nature, the more that energy amplifies your connection to it. So, for example, when I was tuning into the Christ Consciousness call during December of 2024 and tuning in a lot to Yeshua and Magdalene's connection, I learned a lot, actually. And I've been in connection with them for a while, but it's not like it's a channel. It's just a transmission that I receive when I want to know very specific details about things. So something that came in, which I didn't talk about, is at least in that call, is many sacred texts encode sexual wisdom in allegory. So they emphasize its transformative power rather than its kind of carnal aspects through storytelling, depending on the text. So in what modern Christianity has become is a bastion of shame, specifically around having sex before you're in union, which I understand why, because in essence, they want to try to talk about this, like be as godly and as clean as you can before you have your partner, because otherwise you're just freely giving of your body and your energy to those who are not worthy of it. I believe it's like casting the pearls before swine or something. You're giving away your energy to people who haven't earned it. And it's also a reverence for the Virgin Mother, which is also held to the highest regard in, let's say, the Bible, for example. And again, like I grew up with Christianity and was baptized Catholic before I had to clear a lot of that old indoctrination stuff out of my system and DNA. And since then I've opened up, you know, learning about all different kinds of religions and things like that. So that story though, that allegory, that parable is told in every single text, ancient text, in different ways. So sex and sex codes are all over all texts. You just have to be able to, let's say, perceive them and then interpret them and see what they were saying behind the story, that behind face value. So to me, embodied union or coherent partnership isn't a concept, it's a blueprint, okay? So I think I said earlier that the field right now is primed for more of these relationships to emerge where they're just really potent in terms of the amplification of the couple. So you hear a lot, like in the older paradigm, it was all about power couples, right? The newer paradigm is really grounded, energetically stable, individually self-supporting and self-rendering in union. So it's deeply embodied. It's not coming with all of the shadowed karmic nonsense. It's an entirely different paradigm. The new paradigm, I guess to me, looks like a living architecture of partnership where coherence and embodiment really meet. There's a confluence there. So whereas the older paradigm required a lot of like manifestation and, you know, a lot of heavy lifting in terms of becoming more aligned and really the feminine doing a lot of the heavy lifting and a lot of the work, this newer paradigm that I'm really starting to get a handle on, I guess, at least in terms of understanding, not physical experience yet, is this embodiment, this embodied partnership, this whatever coherence union inherently already knows in terms of the body's recognition. It's a remembrance how to merge polarity, masculine and feminine, structure and flow, consciousness and life force. It's an inheritance. So when you come together at a very divinely orchestrated time. And when I say that, you have like massively given up free will for this type of union to come into your life. It's a deep level of receptivity for the feminine, and it is a massive recognition. And it's almost like that type of partner lights up and turns on. He gets like fully, fully switched on in a different way when this feminine is around, but it's void of all of the heaviness, all of the karmic stuff that gets bogged down in relationships where we end up reincarnating our childhoods and it becomes really painful, instead of truly being in a higher level of flow where the pair of you really are in high co-creation states, instead of it feeling really like you're just getting by. So before I talked about how ancient mystery schools called hieros gamos, like the sacred union, it wasn't in having it not be about sex or partnership, but it was about integration and wholeness and remembering how to run all of your energy through a coherent system without fragmentation. That to me is where the kind of the older language set around divine union, how it reiterates or reemerges into this next iteration of what partnership and coming together with your person looks like. So again, the indigenous lineages worked with the same intelligence, just in a different way. Sex wasn't separate from nature, from spirit, or from self. It was how you communed with it, how you became it. Sacred texts didn't necessarily, or let's say they didn't need to spell it out. They hid it in plain sight kind of thing through allegory, symbol, patterns, because the body already knows. So union isn't something you find outside of yourself. It's something you activate within yourself. And then that remembrance is what creates that magnetism for you guys to find each other. So moving on to the third point here, pleasure as expansion, not indulgence. So unlike modern perceptions that separate pleasure from spirituality, ancient cultures saw pleasure as a natural amplifier of life force. And you guys will likely hear me talk about this over and over and over again, from the Taoists practicing sexual alchemy to ancient Civ to indigenous cultures syncing up with nature in order to be able to expand their consciousness. It was never used as an indulgence. Men were actively encouraged to have a tremendous amount of self-control, which led to having more self-respect. And women were constantly in tune with their cycles to know when their bodies were ready, not ready. It was kind of a very intelligent system, right? That's why we should, all women, really, no matter where state, what stage you are in, you should be tracking your cycle. You really should be honoring and tracking your cycle and syncing it up with nature to the best of your ability. It will completely change your reverence and love for your body and yourself. So in modern culture, where we are seeing sex and pleasure as a way to escape and a way to avoid and a way to numb, to the point where it's become such a hyper fixated addiction. Those three things, right? Like sex, drugs, rock and roll, any of those things to keep you out of your body, to keep you out of time, to emotionally numb and move away from pain and towards pleasure, is a very human experience. But today it's also bred that level of distortion. Okay, that pattern has become so aggregated in distortion that it's bifurcated into like 500 different thousand data points of kink. And so now people are pushing the level of pain in order to feel what it feels like to be in their bodies. So instead of it being revered and soft and a way to amplify and honor and be deeply present with, it's become a masochistic way to experience such deep levels of pain that it's almost a self-abuse pattern. If you've seen in the last, let's say, 5 years, in particular 6 years, that the way our minds are being conditioned to accept what would normally be completely and wildly unacceptable with how we present ourselves and how normalized extreme sexual activity is and abuse is, you can start to see, oh, okay, the overarching theme and pattern here is that sex has become so distorted. We've moved so far away from it being sacred and present and connected that now it has just become like almost one big fluid polyamorous orgy, and it's in our faces everywhere. It's grooming children. It's all over our what we see, our shows, and you see it break down in partnerships and family systems and in partnerships where no one wants to talk about it. The kids are just left out in the dark, and then the couples are really struggling to be safe with one another, to be able to go deeper within themselves. Okay, let's grab a couple of questions that came in through some online surveys about how to handle when you are, let's say, irresponsible with sex and then the inherent shame that comes in with that. There was several questions that came in around how do we navigate awakening and also having casual sex. So the first question is, sex for me is really empowering and inspiring and feels really good, but I also have been working through a lot of trauma, and it's been a way for me to reclaim my personal power. But I also am in my awakening process where I'm really learning about how it can be detrimental to give away your energy. How do I navigate awakening while having casual sex? Really great question. Thank you to Jocelyn Y, who sent this in, for the permission to be able to share it on this podcast. I think it's going to be really helpful. So I'll give you something very tally-coded. First, awakening doesn't cancel out desire. Consciousness doesn't erase the body, and casual sex isn't inherently unconscious. It's all about how you're working with it. So the question underneath all of this is, are you using sex to escape yourself, or are you using sex to meet more of yourself? Because there's a difference between sex as bypass and sex as field work. And I will also say that everyone in their awakening journey will go through different phases of having a very specific relationship with what sex looks like for them. If, let's say, casual sex can absolutely be a part of the awakening path, if you know how to stay connected to your body, your own signal, and your integrity in the process. But in this particular question, my sense is there's some shame you're feeling, which is why you're asking for almost like a set of permission. And or you've had a really good time, but based on the information that you've either consumed with my stuff or other people's stuff, there's some kind of stigma around why, let's say, being sexually free for you is empowering, but it's being condoned elsewhere. And so it's bringing up a level of shame. My sense with Jocelyn is that there was a lot of religious patterning around not wanting to talk about it, specifically on the paternal line. And so it's bringing up a lot of shame. So you felt very disempowered with your body and sex growing up, let's say. And so you've utilized this period of time that you're in now. Just again, this question came in through an online questionnaire and survey. My sense is like you're in your mid-20s. That's a very fertile time for women, and you're starting to feel really good in your body, having moved through some of this trauma, and that's very magnetic. And so you're starting to get a different level of attention, and that feels very, very powerful. So women who have used their newfound sexual freedom, whether or not that's losing weight, whether or not it's getting strong or getting fit, or feeling like they've actually made breakthroughs in having that beauty and body be weaponized against them and not feeling safe with their level of beauty. And then you kind of get a handle on that, and you kind of learn how to weaponize, let's say, the sex that did hurt you, like let's say utilizing your sexuality to weaponize men against their own shit for your own benefit, that can be a very empowering type of feeling. So who's that 90s? Nicole something. She had that same paradigm. Pamela Anderson had that same paradigm. Marilyn Monroe had that same paradigm. Anna Nicole, that's who it was. They all had a very, very similar imprintation of, I've come through abuse, I learned that sex was shame, and now I'm hypersexual, and I'm really learning how to utilize my sexual energy for the better, and I'm almost exploiting myself, but at least it's my choice instead of someone exploiting it for me kind of thing. So, and I also want to preface all of this by saying what's casual for one system might be deeply disruptive for another. What looks sacred on the outside might just be another performative loop. It's never an act, it's the frequency you're running through it. So a working reframe could be, can I stay connected to my body before, during, and after? Am I using this sexual activity to collapse into old patterning or expand into new awareness? Is this friction or frequency, transaction or transmission? You know, essentially, how are you, instead of just utilizing it to amplify desire and seeing that you're a very desirable person and having a good physiological release, be more intentional about it. All of this is about intention. All of this is about learning. Ultimately, you kind of realize that it, because of the way that women connect through oxytocin and serotonin, especially through sex, that it's far more interesting to slow burn that connection and then be physical with someone who has really earned that level of access to your body. Kind of say this matter of fact from a quantum psychosomatic perspective. Sex is nervous system work. Sex is pattern visibility work. Okay. Sex is energy management work. It will show you where you're coherent and where you're fragmented. It will show you what you're really available for beyond the mind story. And if you're utilizing it from a very heightened level of perspective, it is incredibly accelerating. So everyone is at different stages with this level of awareness and this level of access to themselves and what they're really interested in utilizing sex for. All right, let's get to this next question. This one came in from Jake L. Hey, Tally, really big fan of your work. Thank you so much, Jake. This has also been permissed to share. I have found myself that I'm really adventurous sexually, and my partner is quite the opposite. I really want to explore a little bit more kink with her. How can I get her to acquiesce to my desires without disrespecting her? All right, so I'm going to do my best to navigate this, but this is a really, really interesting question. So first, I just want to go with the patterns behind each person. So Jake, let's say for you, there's a desire for adventure. Typically when a man or a woman wants to, well, it's different for a man when he wants to experience more kink, let's say, it's usually there's this desire for adventure because it stems from having a need for excitement for something other than predictability, which my sense is over responsibility and having a very predictable and stable life can get really mind numbing. And that's when it's almost like wanting to live a separate life. You want to break the pattern of predictability, and that comes by way of, I want more sexual stimulation. So if you back up, the masculine frequency has two states, loaded and unloaded. Okay, it's that simple. You're either charged fully or you're completely discharged. So for men, they have to have some type of release. Like, you guys have to be able to masturbate because you need to be releasing that level of energy so it cycles through the body, whether or not you're getting a lot of intimacy and connection with your partner, or you're just taking care of it yourself through porn and then you're reserving a certain part of it for your partner, whatever else. But I really need women to understand this. It's very, very, like, their hormones, men's hormones cycle every 12 hours. They go from a loaded state where they're biohacking and just pumping up their testosterone to going into an unloaded state where they burn themselves out, and then they regulate that level of hormone balance, right? The hormones shooting up, hormones going down, loaded, unloaded. Part of the sexual experience is incredibly important for men. They need it to be able to self-sustain itself, okay? They have to nourish themselves through that. So when it gets really stable and overstable and overpredictable, there's usually a need for just something wild, right? To get them to expand their capacity to be able to take in more information. When I tune into this question, it's more about a desire for expansion versus a comfort in tradition. That's one of the patterns, right? So Jake here is expressing a need for transformation or more expansive energy in his life, and sex could be the primary channel for that. So in this case, I would want to look at other areas in Jake's life to see where he's getting more of a dynamic, exchange of energy, where he's getting expanded, where he's not, where he's amplifying and really getting strong and utilizing, let's say, combat, right? Does he do jujitsu? Are you in some interdisciplinary? Are you moving your body? What are you putting in your body? What are your patterns? It's really, really important for men to have that. And on the other hand, your partner's kind of comfort with tradition is her way of having something that's intimate and stable where emotional bonding is really paramount for your partner. Like, let's say as an example. So chances are she didn't have a stable upbringing and didn't feel safe in her body, and you provide that for her, and she likes it really predictable and really, really expected because that's where she feels safe. You guys are mirroring the same avoidance and also need for expansion. Both of you want to have expansion, but you're mirroring the polarity of it. You're wanting to do it through, Jake's wanting to do it through physical activity. Your partner wants to experience more expansion through deeply rooted practicality and expectation and tradition. So both of you guys want expansion. So the question here, the work through, is how can you both expand? Okay. What are you guys both looking for through this kink exploration, but also the avoidance of the kink because of fear and whatever else. Your partner might be feeling like she's not going to be able to give you everything that you want. And so there's all this other shit that's coming up for her. So I would say, how do you get her kind of on your team with exploring more kink without disrespecting her? Is first, I would have a really open conversation about how you're feeling and listen to what she's feeling. And my chances are you guys are both looking for the same thing, but it's manifesting in different ways. So if you can identify what you really want instead of what you think you want, which is just more kink play. And that is, by the way, that's probably totally fine. Nothing wrong with that. However, my sense is you're really looking for just more action. You want more expansion in your life and you're trying to achieve that through sex. So if there is a different way for you guys to come together to experience more connection and more expansion together in different ways, other than how you guys have been connecting, what would that look like for you? The other pattern at play here is on one side, there's fear of vulnerability, okay, which could be you, Jake. And then there's fear of rejection, which is what your partner is. So there's two sides of the same coin. If something is really stable and predictable, then you can't get rejected, which is my sense is again why your partner actually tends to have to move towards that. So she feels like she's fulfilling an aspect of her duty and she really doesn't want to let you down. Then there's the fear of vulnerability, which is where you're coming in, where you want the excitement. So inherently, like kink, depending on the partner, it can create a tremendous level of vulnerability, or it can be utilized as a way to facilitate more abuse. And then through that abuse, you find and access more of your vulnerability. So what would be available for you if you wanted to be able to explore more ways to be vulnerable with yourself? I'm talking to Jake now, and then offer that to your partner. So again, my sense is, Jake, you may fear that without novelty or dynamics, that the relationship becomes stale, or that your needs aren't fully met, and that fear, okay, fear of being vulnerable and kind of driving into deeper connection with your partner, not physically, but intimately and emotionally. Women need to feel safe emotionally. They have to feel that. Otherwise, they're just not going to give you anything you're looking for. They're only going to be able to go as deep as their nervous system is regulated to hold capacity for receiving. So instead of like, how can I get my partner to acquiesce to what I want? Think about how you actually can drive more pleasure to her. How can you actually create more pleasure? How can she receive more pleasure? Because I guarantee you, when you shift from moving into more pleasure for your partner and helping her become even more emotionally safe and vulnerable within her body and herself, you're automatically going to get the effects of what that expansion can create for you. By the way, could look like all different kinds of exploratory play. So moving forward, the work would be to reframe, like, let's say, communication styles, sexual communication styles, and then relationship expectations. So whenever you hit a lull or there's this deep desire to experience more or something else, there's typically many underlining patterns in the background that are driving fear of vulnerability, fear of rejection, fear of stagnancy, different ways that the masculine and feminine maneuver their energetics. And what one person would call expansion, the other one calls contraction via tradition. All these different things are at play within that particular question. So that would be something really exciting to look at, because I believe on the other side of this, there's tremendous momentum and the field gets really, really wide and big and vast in order for you to be able to connect more together and expand together beyond just physicality. Because then you're going to run into the cycle of pushing the boundaries physically of what maybe, let's say, your partner is comfortable with in order to feel like she's giving you what you want in order to please, at the detriment of her sacrificing herself. And that's not what you want. You don't want to facilitate abuse and self-sacrifice and abandonment. You want to alchemize the shadow, come together, and then utilize all these things that I'm talking about in this series to expand each other's field and awareness and connection to each other. And that looks like men creating in a very emotionally safe place for women to be able to drop into their bodies more. And then through that receptivity of pleasure, men get to really experience the acceleration of what women naturally provide energetically. All right, you guys, in part 3, We are going to talk about the science of orgasm and energy exchange. Should be a really good episode. In the meantime, all information on my programs is available at tallymiller.com. Links will be in the show notes. You can also follow me on Substack and Instagram. If you have any questions, please either email the team at hello@superfreak.co or you can message me on IG and I will either utilize them for these podcasts or answer you directly in the DMs. In the meantime, take good care of yourself, question everything, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.